This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number two of Bob, Groz, and Tom on a feel-good Monday. If you're a Seahawk fan, a feel-bad Monday if you're a Husky fan, a feel-good Monday if you're a Cougar fan.
Is there anything else?
All right, how about this? How about a feel-good Monday if you're a Jamal Crawford fan?
Okay.
He signed a he's playing in what feels like his 25th NBA season.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it's 16. He signed a contract to play for the Phoenix Suns today.
Yeah, good enough.
So he's back. Yeah, yeah.
But while you're on the topic of NBA, feel bad because Adam Silver said expansion is just not on the table at all right now. Not part of the discussion.
I mean, I'm not going to say I told you so.
That's what we've heard all along, though. This is like the third or fourth time he said that.
But I mean, that's why I had very mixed feelings about when the NBA came here for an exhibition game, giving them your money, because it didn't mean anything.
Well, I mean, you gave them your money, you just went there to enjoy that night.
It was a very good time to remember the Sonics and things like that. There was no message to be sent to the NBA, nothing to be shown to the NBA. Seattle didn't have to prove anything to the NBA.
Right.
And it's basically been clear that they're not looking to expand, and people have talked about Memphis being a team that may want to move. I just don't see anyone moving.
I don't see that happening.
Franchises are worth too much.
And I don't even think it's about whether or not Seattle has anything to prove. I think Adam Silver is fine with Seattle as a market. He even talked about what they're doing with the building and everything. It's just that expansion is not being discussed. It's got nothing to do with Seattle and what they're doing or not doing here.
Right. Exactly. Right?
I mean, here he is talking about it while we're on the topic.
To me, what we're most focused on is ensuring that we have 30 strong teams right now, and we still have work to go. So not only if you expand does it dilute revenue, but it dilutes talent. I think that's one thing that people don't always focus on. They hear big prices for expansion teams, but it's like selling equity. So all of our teams now that own 1/30th of the global prospects of the league, if you expanded by two teams, then own 1/32nd of the global prospects of this league. So that, I love Seattle personally. I think it's a great market. They're doing all the right things in terms of building a new arena or revitalizing Key Arena. It's not on the agenda right now.
So we're basically right where we have been for about the last
8 years. Right. 10 years, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it's just nowhere. Well, we're not nowhere, though, because we are getting another building here.
Correct.
I mean, that's a step in the right direction. But for now, just focus on the hockey.
Right.
That'll be just fine. I was just reading an article in the break there, Groz, in the Seattle Times from Mike. Is it Vorrell or Vorrell? I haven't met him yet, but I've read a lot of his stuff in the Times. He does a good job covering the
Seattle. Former Notre Dame writer.
Okay.
He used to cover Notre Dame football.
Oh, well, this is a step up? Yeah, this would be a step
up,
right?
Sure, it is. The NFL.
All right, so he was writing about how there's all the Seahawks, the 12s, if you will, have this worldwide presence. And yesterday when I was driving home from West Seattle, I was listening to Rabel and Wyman talking about that, how the place was just basically overrun by Seahawk fans. And sometimes you think, all right, well, how much is that just being played up for our own purposes? I don't know. But is there something about the Seattle Seahawks, at least in recent years, that you think might give them a greater international appeal than somebody, even like the Patriots, for example, which are a team that wins all the time and has a worldwide superstar?
I don't think they have a greater international appeal than the Patriots, but to answer your question, yes, and it's been being excellent. Winning a couple of Super Bowls, having a team laden with stars, sure.
Getting to a couple of Super Bowls.
Yeah, well, winning a Super Bowl, getting to a couple, being the elite team for the last 5 years. Yes. If the Seahawks had been playing average football, 7-9, 8-8, for the last 6 years and had gone to London, it wouldn't have been overrun with Seahawk fans.
Probably not. I mean, there are some stories in this article about how the fandom for people in Germany and France or wherever it started in the 80s. There's a couple other ones talking about how Sean Alexander and the success they had in the mid-2000s there. And then, of course, like you're talking about, guys like Russell Wilson and Sherman. But
I'm not so sure why it's a big deal.
That's what I was thinking yesterday. I'm thinking, well, what would that be? What, is it the colors, the jersey colors?
No. I don't mean it that way. I mean it that it strikes me as kind of a small town thing. I'm going to make people really mad right now, I think.
Okay.
Because who cares?
Well, when you're over in London and you see, if you decide to make that trip and all of a sudden you see a million other people like yourself, that could be kind of a cool thing.
I'm not saying it's not a cool thing, but I mean, it doesn't mean anything.
What
does it mean?
Well, what does anything mean? What are you talking about?
What does anything mean?
I don't understand.
So I'm glad that there are a lot of 12s in other places, but I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, what does it mean? The Seahawks are wildly popular, the most popular team in football.
I think it's interesting, given that it is Seattle, right? Which is, it's not New York, it's not L.A., and yet here they are with this international reach.
You have a huge international reach for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, I mean, you know,
traditional team, legacy team. Yeah,
it's true for a lot of teams.
Okay, but where did the Seahawks' reach come from? Unless it's just come out in the last 10 years.
Well, I think it's come out in the last 10 years.
Okay, and that's a fair point of view. I'm just it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
It's cool, but I mean, it's meaningless.
DJ, are you hearing this? It's meaningless.
What is it? Well, tell me what it means.
It's just something for the fans to celebrate is all. It's like any other thing we talk about on a show like this. I don't understand what you mean by meaningless.
Meaningful is playing well. Meaningful is being in Super Bowls. Meaningful is playing well. Being internationally popular, okay. It doesn't mean anything.
Okay. I mean, you could say that about so many different things that we talk about. You're right. But except while we're on the topic of London and the whole trip over there, I just thought it was interesting that this came up. It's like, this isn't just any team going over there. This is a team that all over Europe evidently has this kind of a following, unless it's just being fluffed up.
I don't think it's been fluffed up. I mean, it sounded like a home game.
Mm-hmm. It did on the TV, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I think it's cool that they've got a lot of fans over there, but I think it's the result of being a winning, compelling, interesting, fascinating team.
Okay, I mean, that's as good an explanation as I can come up with.
Sure.
They have been, if nothing else, they've been interesting.
I think that it's true for a lot of teams. Now, it's not true for the Raiders because they haven't been.
Right, I mean, they haven't. They've got the silver and black, which is left over from like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, but they haven't been a factor in football for 20 years, really.
No. I mean,
right?
No, they haven't, but I mean, are people walking around in Germany wearing James White jerseys? You know what I mean? Because Patriots have been a successful team,
sure,
obviously, too. You mentioned Pittsburgh there. I mean, I'm watching Patrick Mahomes play last night. I'm sure people are chomping at the bit trying to get a piece of him right now and all the marketing potential that there is for him. I mean, could the Kansas City Chiefs become that team between him and Hill and Hunt? I mean, that could be a gold mine right there.
For the NFL, you mean?
Well, for the NFL, for the Chiefs, for however you want to.
Well, the NFL gets all the revenue.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, jerseys, things like that. The NFL shares all that. That's all share. NFL is all about sharing everything,
mm-hmm.
revenue, all that stuff. So it's the league that benefits from it.
Okay.
No, that's just my point. So the league benefits from it, and international exposure is good because you want to expand internationally. You want to sell more jerseys? You want to make more money?
Well,
right?
But not everything comes down to the bottom line. I'm just.
Whoa! Yes, it does.
Not to me, it doesn't. I'm just interested in the fact that this team, a random Seattle team that's had a ton of success, but they have this footprint now on planet Earth, or at least over in Europe. I was a little surprised to hear that. Is all.
Okay.
That's all. I found it to be interesting. That's why it's meaningful, because I was interested in it.
Sure. I mean, I think that it's cool. It was the first time they were over there, which has something to do with it, I imagine, as well. And they've been a very good team. They've been one of the top teams in the NFL for the past decade.
And hopefully that will continue this year. Hit the music, DJ. All right, we'll run through some of the highlights from yesterday, just highlighting some of the standout performances. It started in the first quarter with this guy.
Penny now in the backfield with a slot left side. Play fake. Russell's going to stop. Half roll. Throw back. It's caught by Penny down the far sidelines. 40, 35, 30. Knocked out of bounds. Far sidelines by Darryl Worley. Russell Wilson half roll to the right. Looks back. Throws the ball to Rashad Penny. And he just took off down the far sidelines.
Like we said before, first round pick. We'll see what that ends up amounting to. But for now, I think if it continued its status quo, they just sprinkle in Penny here and there, I think we're fine with that.
Sure, of course. It's all about results.
Yeah, how can you not be with the way Carson and Davis are running right now? The man of the day yesterday, the man of the match, as it were, Gruzz, Frank Clark.
Jared Cook slots on the left side. Here comes the rush on Carr. He gets hit. Ball comes out. The Raiders fall on it, but now the Seahawks have it. They pick it up. They're going to go. No, it's going to be spotted down. First down, Seahawks inside the 25-yard line. A strip sack by the Hawks. Jaron Reed is the one who recovers.
I think Derek Carr was having nightmares about Frank Clark last night.
I think he will be going forward, sure.
I would
zipping around the corner, coming after him. And I don't know if Carr was going to come back in that game or not.
What do you mean? Oh.
Because he got hurt. Right. He hurt his arm, and we never did find out because the Seahawks did what a good team does when they got the ball. They just sat on it.
I think it was after that play. There was a funny moment where the camera was on both of them for just a second. Clark took Carr down. Clark was like lying on his back with Carr on top of him.
Yep.
And then as soon as the play was whistled dead, he just took him and tossed him aside like a rag doll. Like after with Carr on top of him. It was just kind of a funny moment.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Nightmares.
Another guy who's been emerging lately, one touchdown catch after another.
There's a shotgun snap. Russell fumbles the snap, looks. Pump fake, steps up, throws to the end zone. Moore is there. He's in the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks. As Moore goes over the back railing behind the end zone, nearest the stands, but he hangs on for a 19-yard touchdown reception, his third of this season.
Tell you one conversation we had a bunch in the offseason. We talked about Jimmy Graham's production, catching all those touchdowns, and how are you going to replace that? Well, between Moore and Tyler Lockett, they're already halfway there.
Well, Lockett, you kind of expected, and the Seahawks definitely expected because they paid him big money to be that guy. Moore is eye-popping.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
He's an eye-popping surprise at this point, and he looks legit, and he looks, I think I heard him say it in the TV broadcast yesterday, that Russell Wilson seems completely comfortable throwing him the ball no matter where he is.
He's very impressive. Yeah, I wonder how much they actually had to work on that to develop whatever chemistry they have right now. Because it seems to be, at least in regular season games, it seems to be out of nowhere. I don't know how much he's going to him in practice and things like that. But yeah, he's right there. I mean, he's doing essentially what you kind of hope
what Jimmy Graham did and what Brandon Marshall you were hoping he was going to do.
Right, just be in the end zone, be available. Now, he's maybe not making those catches in the same way that go up like a basketball player and get him, but who cares?
Yeah,
right.
Getting him.
You're just looking for the production, and he's right there. We talked about this one before, Legion of Boom.
Carr out of the shotgun, has Martin in the backfield with him. Carr stops, looks, throws to the middle. Oh! Incomplete pass. McDougal levels one of the Raiders who stays down. It was Amari Cooper.
I don't know if Bradley McDougal is their best defensive player, but he often plays like it. And yesterday,
that's
just
a good question.
Well, because we talked a lot about Frank Clark, and I mean, Frank Clark is going to have a bigger impact as a great player than a safety would.
You made the point, though, that Frank Clark, you know, you can have the sense that he certainly does get sacks and everything like that, but maybe disappears for a while, and that's not meant as a criticism. It's just meant that he's a pass rusher.
Right, it's not
McDougal
every series.
McDougal is involved in running and passing. I wouldn't argue with you. I'd say he's probably the most valuable defender.
Yeah, I mean, so far. I mean, he's able to... He can strip guys of the ball. He can recover it. He can lay out the hits.
He's
everywhere in terms of coverage. I mean, what more could you ask from a guy like that? Here's a little bit more of David Moore.
Russell takes a shotgun snap, looks left, throws down the sideline. David Moore reaches up over the defender and makes the catch. Reaching up in his hands over Daryl Worley and makes the catch on the near sidelines. And just like that, the Hawks are in field goal range, a 29-yard reception.
I guess he went up like a basketball player to get that one. I guess that works. Maybe not in the end zone, but he did it. Yeah, look, it's another year where the Seahawks, they don't have that Antonio Brown superstar receiver type guy, but they've got Baldwin, they've got Lockett, and Moore is emerging here, so everything pointed
in the right direction.
They're
getting open, they're catching the ball, Russell Wilson's throwing them perfect passes, he's not turning it over.
When you run the ball,
all good.
Yeah, when you run the ball as well as they do, Graz, the superstar wide receiver thing, it seems like it's not as necessary, right?
Agree.
Because these guys are open.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not like...
I'd say running the ball is more important than having a superstar wide receiver.
If you can run it effectively the way they are, I would take the good running game over the great wide receiver and trying to force it to him all night long.
Yep.
Absolutely. More of Frank Clark.
Third down now and 16, back at his own 19. Oh, Carr gets hit, ball comes out. Seahawks pick it up. It's Martin, the rookie. As Carr got hammered in the backfield, ball came out. Martin picks it up. Seattle players on the far sidelines are going nuts.
So Frank Clark, just a monster yesterday. Now, a little side note to this game, because as we're listening to Rabel and Wyman call this, did you hear what happened with where they were sitting?
No.
They were like in the stands at almost field level.
Really?
You know what Wembley looks like, obviously.
Yeah.
It doesn't go up like they don't have a first level, like a lower bowl, then a mezzanine, then a 300 level. It's just kind of one big bowl from what I can tell. And they were back, but they talked about it on the broadcast.
They will spot the ball near the 25-yard line. In fact, right across the 25, out to about the 27. We will tell you now, this is a very low angle. It's going to be difficult to get you the exact line where the play is stopped. A 7-yard pickup.
I could see how that could be tough from where they are, because they were kind of far off the field, too.
Hey, man, I've done community college football broadcasts. One of which was in a stand that was in the about 5 yards behind an end zone, sitting on the side of a hill holding the microphone. I can appreciate that you really do get used to having a nice press box in the high
bird's
location.
Bird's eye view, especially when the play ends, knowing exactly which yard line it's on.
That
it's
becomes
tougher
an
to
important
spot,
thing.
Because there's just people in your way.
Yep. Hey, yes. Steph, the field was lined when I did this game, the one I did in the end zone, and there were no yard markers, so I'd have a guy running up and down the field that I put my binoculars on.
No
at the
way.
End of the game. Giving me like 4 or 5
fingers.
Yeah, so I know what yard line the ball was.
The 44. I don't know.
The ball spotted on the 37 yard line.
If he hadn't said that, I wouldn't have known. The broadcast sounded fine. I listened to it for about an hour yesterday. But
he just wants to cover his bases.
Yeah, I guess so. Chris Carson, probably next to Russell Wilson, maybe the face of the young Seahawks.
So Russell takes a shotgun snap. This time he's going to hand off to Chris Carson, who finds a little running room. Makes it. What a move! Makes him in the mid-20, down to the 10, runs over a man and gets knocked out of bounds. Rogers Cromartie came up to hit him, and Chris Carson just said, get out of my way, sidestepped him and ran right down the near sidelines.
Yeah, Chris Carson doing in front of Marshawn Lynch what Marshawn Lynch used to do for the Seahawks, right? Just barreling through everybody.
Quote a guy who used to work here, Chris Carson doing Chris Carson things.
Don't do that. James Jones doing James Jones things.
We need a nick for Chris Carson.
Chris Carson. Yeah, it's a very normal sounding name, isn't
it? Yeah. Work on it, 12s.
Tweet us if you want, or text us, 710-710, a nickname for Chris Carson. He probably has one, and I don't even know about it. Doug Baldwin, definitely still part of the offense.
Takes the snap. Four-man rush by the Raiders. He's got time, steps up, he's going to let it fly. Got Doug Baldwin deep. Baldwin reaches back. He makes the catch at the 10-yard line. Worley looked back and never found the ball. Doug Baldwin did. Baldwin comes alive in the second half. He picks up 42 and a first down.
Nice to see. Just nice to see Doug Baldwin back involved with the offense. You knew he could be. It was sort of a strange thing that he wasn't last week. And he said, well, you know, you got to be targeted. And I was wondering, Jesus, is this going to be the return of angry Doug Baldwin? No.
Do you think he would become a distraction in that way at this point in his career? Selfishly, because we know there are players out there who would.
Plenty of diva wide receivers. I'd be a little
surprised.
I think if he wasn't targeted, I think he's at the point in his career where he'd be like, they got to throw me the ball. And you might see a sideline thing or two. It wouldn't shock me.
I wouldn't be shocked at a sideline thing.
But
if you were carrying on publicly,
I would be a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah. Especially if the team were winning.
Yeah.
And they were actually scoring points. Yeah, if you're losing and he's not being targeted, then I can definitely understand that. If they're winning, though, not so much. Some new faces getting involved in the action.
Doug Martin, play fake. Carr steps up, gets hit, spins around and goes down back at the 25. Shamar Stephan on the sack. The Seahawks with another one.
Yeah, the Seahawks just all over that Raider defensive line.
Yeah, just tore him up all day long to the point where he was having trouble getting off the field.
Carr's going to drop back again. This time he's going to slide down. Gets hammered. He tried to run upfield, and this time Jaron Reed and company were not going to let him pick up a first down, and now Carr is slow to get up.
Yeah, after an entire day's worth of that, I can't really say that I blame him.
Yeah, he was beat up. He was beat up in that game.
Star of the game, Frank Clark.
Yeah, don't we do that thing?
Yeah, we do that thing.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah, the thing where where we talk about the most valuable player.
When are we doing that?
And the guy. Well, we could do it next. I didn't think we were going to have time here.
Oh, okay.
But we could try. We can just do it off the top of our head. Why not?
All right.
All right. So the biggest star of the game would be one, and then there's we call it the weakest link, I guess, of the stars. So you'd have guys like Chris Carson, David Moore, Clark, like I said.
Baldwin.
Who else stuck out?
Baldwin,
you want to put him in that group? Okay, yeah. So that's four. Are we missing any other big playmaker from the game? Russell, maybe?
Wilson's got to be in there, sure.
Yeah, but I'm not going to call him the weak link. I guess I would go Baldwin only because it felt like his production didn't necessarily lead to points. That last catch we played for you led to an interception.
Right.
Which isn't his fault, but no. It just didn't have that kind of impact on the game that Clark's did.
No, Clark would be the number one.
Clark had himself
would
a game.
It would be the best of the best.
Yeah.
And the worst of the best, I'll totally take Russell Wilson for granted. It's a mistake. It's what people have done around here for years, but I'll take him for granted in this group because I think you needed Carson. I think Baldwin bounce back was important. Of course, he doesn't get the ball unless Russell throws it well.
Right.
Russell had a great game, so don't get me wrong. I think it's very tough to find a least of the best in this particular game because everyone played well.
You're right. I think if I was going to back you on the Russell thing, you could make an argument that a lesser quarterback could have gone in there, played for the Seahawks, and still won that game.
Okay, good. Thank you for that argument. I needed one.
You could, really. I mean, he had to make some throws, but...
It was the way they were running the ball, the way the line was protecting, it was not the hardest day.
Now, he still had to make... I mean, that throw to
Baldwin... I'm not comfortable saying it.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable saying it.
The point of the game is that we designate a guy as a weakest link. Yeah, because he's still great.
Right. The weakest of the best.
Right. But remember, that Russell fumbled that snap right before... he threw it the touchdown to Moore there, right? So if you have a lesser quarterback inexperience, take your guy Nathan Peterman, for example. You think he's going to be able to make that throw?
Why has he still got an NFL job?
I don't know, because it's the Buffalo Bills.
Well, I mean, still. I mean, he's been abysmal whenever he gets the opportunity. Abysmal. And now I don't know how bad Rosen's hurt. Is he going to be playing for a lot?
I don't know. Can you help but ask the question about Kaepernick, though? Now, it's been 2 years.
Oh, I don't know what he'd be now, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, but just say this had happened last year.
Yeah, they'd be a lot better off with him.
Yeah, if you're the Buffalo Bills, how can you not look at him and say, okay, we can do better than Nathan Peterman at this point?
Yep, they can. Then you'd have to be Kaepernick.
Right. I mean, who else is out there? Somebody from Canada?
Anyone.
Anybody?
Anybody.
Yeah, well, clearly it's not working. I think that's the point. All right, yesterday an easy win, a tough loss. What do they mean going forward for both the Huskies and the Seahawks? Halftime show's next.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob, Roz, and Tom.
All right, it is the Halftime Show. We talked a bunch about both the Seahawks and the Huskies here. Let's switch gears over to baseball real quick, Ruz. Because I texted you on Friday night as we were watching what was a pretty darn interesting opening act of the NLCS, in which the Brewers emerged victorious. But they were definitely going into their, you know, we're going to run every pitcher we have out there.
Well, they went with the opener to begin with. So
right.
And they did go deep, and the Dodgers got some runs on them, and they... Same thing happened in Game 2. The Brewers took the lead. The Dodgers actually caught them and passed them in Game 2. And you asked me, can you do this for the whole series? And I sent back to you, I said, well, if it gets to Game 6 and Game 7, I'm not sure.
But
now, the Brewers did get a great start from the most unlikely guy.
Former Mariner Wade Miley
was unhittable.
5 2/3. And... That was the one domino that needed to fall to make this whole thing work. Because if they had to take him out in, say, the second inning, that game could have gone differently.
Yeah.
You know?
It gone very differently. Their bullpen would have been truly trashed. And I don't think that it is at this point. Game 3 is tonight, by the way, between the Dodgers and the Brewers. And folk hero Walker Buehler pitching for the Dodgers, who's 24, is off Tommy John surgery, had a 1.5 or 1.75 ERA since August. And was nails in the Dodgers game to get to the postseason, is pitching for L.A. tonight.
Part of the reason why the Dodgers were able to rally down the stretch and really hang in that race.
It's on a 30-year anniversary of something fairly special, too. Wish we had the Jack Buck call of Kirk Gibson's home run.
I was going to say the Vin Scully, actually. I think I've got it in here
Scully
somewhere.
Scully, she is gone. I didn't think Scully's call was that great, except the lead-up to it was.
The radio call is always going to be better because it's more descriptive.
I thought Jack Buck's call was very underrated. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable.
I don't believe what I just saw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure what this is, Graz, but it says Gibson home run.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
I was doing a college football game when that happened.
Were you watching it?
No, I was doing a college football
game. I know, but you didn't have like the TV next to you or nothing like that?
Nope, in Northern California, Sacramento State game. So it was kind of in Oakland A's territory and heard the audible gasp and had no idea what it was.
I was still too young to stay up late at that point. I was 9 years old. I probably could have, but I just fell asleep. So I saw the opening of that game and then just ended up falling asleep. I've seen it about 1,000 times since then. But
Well, Gibson, the best part about the Scully call was the lead-up. If there's ever a time to catch lightning in a bottle, this is it. And Dodgers are hoping, you know, for one swing here. And
right.
He had the two bad swings beforehand, and it was just so completely unlikely. And then in the miniseries baseball that Ken Burns did, Bob Costas had a great line to it because he was in the bullpen, he was in the dugout. So he told the story about Gibson saying he had one good swing left in him and then pointed out the utter surprise of the Dodgers when he hit it.
Oh, God,
they
yeah.
Just absolutely, you know, I mean, you know, you always hope for good things and it's exciting when it happens. But in this case, it was just total surprise because he was hurt. He never had another at-bat in the series and probably shouldn't have even had that at-bat.
Because the guy who was up before him, Mike Davis.
Yep.
Was a guy who was hitting like 180 for the year.
180 for the season.
And he's up against Eckersley, who had two quick outs,
yep.
Who just wouldn't put the ball over the plate. Everything was away, away, away. Walked him.
Yep.
I mean, think about that. That's like walking the pitcher in that situation.
It was, though. Mike Davis wound up having a good series, but it was just a completely unexpected thing. So the Dodgers, we'll see. If you're watching the game, I'm sure they'll mention that a time or two.
Now, just from a baseball viewership standpoint, are you enjoying this whole let's go to the bullpen every 10 seconds
thing?
No, I hate
it.
Because I'm not.
I hate it.
Strategically, if it works for you, I understand what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it just makes the games longer. It's the same lament that I have about analytics in terms of changing the game with shifts and everything like that. And you know, glorifying not minding the strikeout and everything. It's changed the game and not for the better.
Right. It's just
I understand guys doing it, and I think it's the future, but it's not as entertaining to watch.
Because Craig Counsell's not worried about what's entertaining to you and me.
Of course not.
He's always worried about trying to win. Yeah.
And the game has switched, it has turned, and they're going to eventually have to deal with it in some way, shape, or form. And it might just be, at the end of the day, shortening the game.
7 innings.
Yeah.
Do it. I mean, that's the only way you can guarantee that it's going to be a little bit shorter. Plus, you let everybody just have their same strategy, whatever they want to do.
Right.
So we'll see. One more quick thing on the playoffs here. Every year it is fascinating to see which ex-Mariners end up shining. Again, just like last year, Chris Taylor. What did he do on Friday night? He hit that ball that Kane couldn't get to there.
And
he looked like he wasn't even having that great of an at-bat. And then it still amazes me that Chris Taylor is anything in this league.
Well, I'm glad that he's got a partner now in Muncy, Max Muncy, who the A's cut loose.
Right.
With 5 home runs for him in his 2 years in Oakland. And he hit 35 this year for the Dodgers. So it's not just the Mariners.
No, it's not that. But I mean...
I know what you mean.
Wade Miley and Chris Taylor.
Stars.
I mean, come on.
Stellar performances.
And the Dodgers are... It's funny. As much money as they spend, they've got Matt Kemp, who's essentially a retread that used to be theirs.
Who was gone.
Who had an all-star year.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, so they are a pretty likable team. All right, next story. With the Huskies second here. That was that did live up to its billing as a classic. I think you predicted it on Twitter right before the game started there.
One of the best games in that series in terms of competitive. It's a terrible loss for Washington, and it's one that's going to sting. And for the Ducks, it's a huge win as they go into their game with Washington State. And I think, unfortunately, my takeaway is Chris Peterson made a mistake by trusting his kicker when he had a chance still to run a play or two there towards the end. A freshman kicker versus a senior quarterback who'd been having the second half of his career. I would have given Jake Browning a chance to win that game, and Chris Peterson elected not to.
You could argue that wasn't conservative, right? Because anytime you play for a field goal, usually we call it conservative. But with the freshman kicker in that situation, and it wasn't like it was a 20-yarder.
The 37-yarder, his career long is 41.
Right.
So you're pushing the edge of what you know he can do.
The most conservative thing he could have done would have been to safely put it in the arms of a ball carrier, right? Keep it on the ground.
Get a few more
and
yards.
Push it. Maybe take a shot.
I'd have taken a shot and then put it in the ground. I would have trusted my senior quarterback who's having this great second half. But look, I mean, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and I think for Husky fans that they're going to be disappointed. But I would have certainly not run the clock down from 35 seconds to 3 seconds. Made the choice of freshman kicker over senior quarterback. Look, he knows his team better than I do, and he's been a great coach, and I have no issues with his play calling or anything like that. I just think he made a mistake in this circumstance.
Was
the played out?
Was the field goal that Henry kicked in the overtime the same distance, roughly?
Was it
a chip shot?
Yeah.
Okay, I just forgot.
Yeah, it was a short one.
Okay. Yeah.
And the defense could have stopped him. I mean, there are plenty of things that didn't happen, but I think you had a chance to be in, at the very least, better field position towards the end of the game, and you weren't.
You know, it's one thing in the NFL with the overtime rules they have, but in college, when you're Oregon and you get a boost because the other team's kicker just missed at the buzzer, and you know you're getting the ball, there's no question that the coin toss doesn't really matter in that sense,
right.
And you know you're starting from a certain field position,
25.
I just feel like a jacked up team like that is going to be ready to put the ball in the end zone.
I agree with
you. Don't you?
Yes.
I think that changes the game mentally in a big, big way.
I agree.
It's one thing to get new life, but to know you're going to get the ball right there, I just think is a big deal. And then as we talked about for most of the day, the Seahawks absolutely destroyed the Oakland Raiders. I didn't think it was going to be that ugly, but indeed
it
was.
I thought it was going to be ugly, and from the Seahawks' perspective, it was not ugly. The game itself was boring and ugly. I thought it was going to be a slog.
Yeah, we thought it would be a different kind of ugly.
I think they're going to win, but, I mean, not pretty.
16-9 or
something like that. And instead, the Seahawks checked every box. You know, the only thing you can nitpick a little bit was penalties. They ran the ball well. They passed it efficiently. Doug Baldwin was no longer MIA.
Mm-hmm.
Their pass rush was there. Frank Clark was elite. Bradley McDougal was hitting everything that moved. There's really nothing to complain about. They held an NFL team to 3 points.
It's about as sound a football game as I think we've seen them play in a long time.
Definitely this year.
Right.
Sure.
I mean, offensively, I'm glad to know that Baldwin's back. Lockett, I mean, does he have 5 touchdowns already?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, that's insane. You could be looking at the league lead by the end of the year.
David Moore's got 3.
Right. I mean, Lockett's looking like a Pro Bowler right now.
He's having a Pro Bowl start to the season, no question about
it. We'll see if Frank Clark ends up getting paid. He had a big day, too. The entire defensive line, that was a big day for them, I thought, as a group.
Absolutely.
It really was, because it wasn't just
I think that
Clark.
The only question you take away from is that because the Raiders are maybe the worst team in football, or you just credit yourself for playing well? And we've seen a lot of circumstances. There were some this past Sunday where lousy teams played good teams down to the wire. So you take it. There's no such thing as a bad win in the NFL, and this was a good win.
Yeah, I think it's more the former what you're talking about there. I think the fact that the defensive line had such a monster day has to do with the fact that the Raiders just have a terrible offensive line. But
You still have the day.
Right, something to build on.
Absolutely.
Right, that's all. All right, text us your questions to the Coors Light text line 710-710. Have an opinion already is next.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. 3 loudmouths, 3 questions, and 1 giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on, baby. This me.
Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on!
Question 1.
Some good suggestions here, Graz, for Chris Carson's nickname.
Oh, good.
And you can keep them coming in, 710-710, the Coors Light text line. I'll just read a bunch of them here. You give me a yay or nay. Chris Cross.
Nay.
Cargo.
Maybe.
Just give me a yay if you like it. It doesn't have to be like it, but okay. Crush Carson.
Yay.
Crash Carson.
Yay.
C Squared.
Nay.
Sea Beast.
Yay.
Carson City. I kind of like that.
That's
one.
That's funny.
How about this? This is my favorite. Carshawn.
Nah, I want to get away from Lynch.
You want to get away from that?
Yeah, I want to get him to have his own identity.
I think you might be right about that. I think that's the best play on words, though.
Yes, it
Carshawn.
Is. So far, for sure.
Sea Train.
That's not bad.
Bumper Carson.
That's pretty good.
Those are the best ones so far.
All right.
Those made no sense.
Keep them coming.
So we like Crush Carson, Crash Carson. Cargo, not bad.
I like Crush Carson.
Crush Carson. Yeah, Crash sounds like he's hitting something and falling right over.
Yeah, he doesn't do that. He crushes.
Chris, I like Carson City. That's fun. All right, next.
Question 2.
Somebody's setting an over-under, Graz, at 4 years for how long Gruden's going to last with the Raiders, even though he signed a 10-year deal. What do you think?
10-year deal worth $100 million. They're going to fire him and eat the contract?
Well, it's not going to happen right now, but
so
four years
would be their second year in Vegas. We'll see. Look, Seattle fans, what Gruden is doing is like what Sam Presti did with the Sonics when he came here. He's tearing down the Raiders to start over because he knows he doesn't have to win now because he doesn't have to appeal to the Oakland fan base.
Right.
So I'm going to disagree with that.
And I think he's got the owner basically in his pocket.
The owner gave him $100 million for 10 years. And so it's the only reason to trade Khalil Mack. You know, it's to get draft picks and it's to rebuild it, and they can do it without pressure because they're already moving.
So let's go one step further. 4 years from now, is Derek Carr still their quarterback?
I think he likes Carr, but, I mean, he's had problems with quarterbacks in the past.
Yeah. Because if you don't win, I mean, if they go 4-12 every year for the next 4 years.
If Carr is upright.
Yeah.
That might be the biggest factor of all.
Even if he is upright, is it going to be? I mean, it might not be his fault, but they could move on anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to say now because it's just been a couple of games, but they're rebuilding without the concern about their home fan base because they're moving. So it's a little difficult to judge him right now.
It's an interesting position to be in because, like you said, it almost feels like he has a free pass a couple of years where they can just mess around a little bit. But
he does.
But when you saw the camera on his face yesterday, he was every bit as mad as he would be if his team were actually in contention and losing that game.
I don't think he wants to win. I don't think he wants to lose.
No, he was as upset as you might expect.
But he is remaking that team, and they brought in a bunch of older veterans this year to try and patch it up, and it's not a good strategy in the NFL to bring in older guys.
He did help build, initially when he was the Oakland coach in the late 90s, he did help to build that, and he got them into the playoffs a couple of years in a row. And you could make the argument he built the team that went to the Super Bowl
he
beat. The Tampa team that he won with, though, was ready-made.
Was inherited, and they weren't good after that.
Right.
They had the Super Bowl year, and they beat the Raiders, of course, and then
Just sort of okay. They made the playoffs a few times, but they weren't that great.
No, they weren't.
So maybe he feels like he's got to get that monkey off his back.
Maybe he does.
Next.
Question 3.
I'm a month away from getting my helicopter private license. What should I do for fun with it first?
Wow.
Do people just fly around in helicopters for fun?
It seems like that's a tough thing to get.
To get the helicopter. Well, I mean, if he's got his license, he could probably go down to a club where he can just...
There's a million fun things you can do, I suppose, but don't do anything risky.
Yeah, seriously.
In this day and age.
You don't normally see helicopters just flying around for the heck of it, do you?
No.
You see news helicopters,
things
like that.
That's the only helicopters I see living downtown. I don't know about out of town.
I mean, whenever you're coming down I-5, you always see the water planes.
You're right. You see planes.
Going back and forth.
Sure, sure. Then when I walk home on East Lake, there's the plane lessons for $97. Probably more than that now.
That's not a bad price for that.
No, it's not.
$97?
Yep. I don't think it's that anymore. I think I'm remembering from the very beginning.
A couple more nickname ideas for Carson. Captain Crunch.
Not bad.
The Carsonator.
I kind of like that one.
Carcinogenic.
Nah, I don't need that.
Flash Carson. Nah, doesn't really work.
Nah.
Costanza.
Don't get that.
Let's see. Incarcerator. No, but... You're on the right track.
Nice board play.
Yeah, not bad. I think as of right now, I'm sticking with Crush Carson.
I like Captain Crunch, though, too. That's a good one.
Captain Crunch. Yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Crash Carson.
Carshawn, though. That's a clever one. All right, I think we're going to catch up. We were trying to catch up with Paul Moyer because he was there in London, but a lot of the people who are actually in London... either aren't back yet, or they're still in the air, or they've just landed, or whatever. So we're going to talk to our other Seahawks insider, Brady Henderson. Maybe we'll get Paul later in the show, or maybe even tomorrow. But there's a lot to discuss, certainly, with the Seahawks going forward. We'll do it next on Bob Graz and Tom.